Hello and welcome to the South Carolina Lead. You trust the lead to keep you up to date on important state news, and we've been doing that more often as our state faces the COVID-19 virus. I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode was recorded on July 29th, 2020 from my home studio in Columbia. Just so you know, some of the information in this podcast may have changed by the time you've heard it. This podcast cuts through the noise and gives you South Carolina-specific COVID-19 news and stories. In this episode, we hear of the struggles facing the state when it comes to testing and medical staffing needs at hospitals, which are reaching critical capacity points. Boeing plans to cut 787 Dreamliner production rates and potentially consolidate the production sites of the wide-body plane. Additionally, we want to hear your stories, so we set up a voicemail box to hear from you all about your daily life in these uncertain times. Leave us a one-minute-long voicemail at 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and what's going on in your world. Like, have you been tested for COVID-19? What was the turnaround time like for those tests? Are you worried about your kids going back to school, or what are your plans for schooling this fall? We want to know. 803-563-7169. Now for the latest in South Carolina. Currently, the spread of COVID-19 is ongoing, widespread, and not contained, according to Department of Health and Environmental Control officials. There have been 1,551 deaths, and currently there are 85,423 cases being reported in all 46 counties as of July 29th at 4 p.m. And 52% of the COVID-19 cases and 49% of the deaths have happened in July alone. Our percent positive rate was declining for 3 days, but now we're ramping back up from 14.6% on July 26th, which was the lowest in weeks, to now 19.9%. There are currently 1,596 COVID-19 patients in hospitals in the state. 404 of those patients are in ICU beds, and 242 patients are on ventilators. Also, here are some excerpts from the Trump administration's Coronavirus Task Force weekly report, which is distributed to states dated July 26. South Carolina is in the red zone, indicating more than 100 cases per 100,000 population last week. We were at 242. In the red zone for test positivity, since it's above 10%. However, we have seen stability in new cases and a decrease in testing positivity. Now, the Coronavirus Task Force recommends a face mask mandate in all current and evolving hotspots. It recommends closing bars and limiting indoor dining to less than 25% capacity. Yes, the Trump administration is recommending a mask mandate, something Governor Henry McMaster, a staunch Trump supporter, has resisted, despite DHEC now saying every county in the state is experiencing a high rate of COVID-19 activity. And lastly, some projections. The Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation projects that South Carolina is on track for deaths to be more than double by November 1st at 3,186. Now, if a statewide mask mandate was implemented, that number is projected to be 1,871. Come Monday, August 3rd, there will be no businesses closed under executive order for the first time since March. Governor Henry McMaster said places like movie theaters, concert halls, stadiums, and more will be reopened, but will need to restrict occupancy to 50% or 250 people, whichever is less. They'll have to require face coverings and follow social distancing protocols. Now, these same measures will be required for restaurants as well. That's right. Occupancy inside of restaurants cannot be above 50%. Servers and diners must wear masks. Tables can't have more than 8 people unless they are family members, and people cannot congregate near the bar. Those are all requirements that take effect on Monday, August 3rd. McMaster said these moves will give the state its best chance at slowing the spread of the virus without shutting down the economy. He again urged folks to wear masks in public and called on counties and cities to lead by passing mask ordinances. But he stopped short of implementing a statewide mask mandate, saying it's not enforceable. Also, AP reporter and friend of the pod, Meg Kennard, asked McMaster about the White House recommendations for a face mask ordinance in hotspots, like we discussed a moment ago. Here was his response.
Well, that's what we're doing. That's exactly what
this
is.
Why not order it statewide?
Because this needs to be enforced by the local authorities, and that is the way to do it. When the going gets tough, when we have to really bear down, it's going to be the multitude of local authorities that do that. This is not an air war. This is a ground war. And we have to have not hundreds, but thousands of troops on the ground, if it gets to that, to see that these precautions are taken. But what we're doing here virtually today, without what I have said today, close to 60% of the people in the state are already under either a recommended or a mandated mask ordinance. We're filling in those gaps today.
Moving on to education, the South Carolina Department of Education approved 6 reopening plans on July 27th, and here's a glimpse of what those plans look like. The Clover School District and Spartanburg District 2 are offering elementary 5-day face-to-face instruction, which includes enhanced safety protocols and keeping students together in cohorts to mitigate the spread of disease. The Berkeley County School District is offering a traditional 5-day face-to-face instruction option, a blended distance option that incorporates online learning platforms with live stream learning experiences, and a self-paced virtual option using Virtual SC. Now, Allendale and Saluda County Schools have both hybrid and fully virtual options. And Anderson 5 will offer in-person instruction 5 days a week, as well as the option of enrolling in the district's new virtual academy. In order to receive state approval now, districts must offer both a virtual and face-to-face option. A time frame to review operational plans to move toward a full 5-day face-to-face instruction model, and the establishment of how high-quality instruction and a broad range of student services will be provided. And just a note, Berkeley County saw protests this week by teachers and education advocates who don't want students, teachers, and staff back in schools as the pandemic continues to rage. So still a lot of politics surrounding how schools are going to be reopening and how they're going to go back to school this fall. And State Superintendent Molly Spearman is also instituting a statewide face mask requirement for all school bus riders, which it said, along with cleaning procedures, will allow districts to increase ridership capacity to 67%. Now let's take to the skies in this business section. Boeing had a rough second quarter due to COVID-19 and its beleaguered 737 MAX airplane, which led to a $2.4 billion loss between April and June. The company is again slashing production of the 787 Dreamliner, which is assembled in North Charleston and Everett, Washington, from 10 planes to 6 starting in 2021, something it was planning on doing in 2022. Now, in light of all this, the company is looking at consolidating the two facilities that assemble and produce the 787 Dreamliner. Here's Boeing CEO David Calhoun on the Wednesday earnings call.
We previously planned to reduce the 787 production rate to 10 per month in 2020 and gradually reduce to 7 per month by 2022. In light of the ongoing challenges presented by the pandemic and the impact on our airline customers, we now plan to reduce the 787 production rate from the current 10 per month to 6 per month in 2021 to further de-risk our skyline, taking into account the financial condition of our customers and the geopolitical environment. Given the lower rate profile, we will prudently evaluate the most efficient way to produce the 787 to include studying the feasibility of consolidating our 787 production into one location. We will continue to evaluate the rate beyond 2021 to balance supply and demand.
The prolonged impact of COVID-19 and production rates will likely lead to more hard decisions when it comes to workforce, Calhoun said.
As I mentioned last quarter, the sharp reductions in demand for our airplanes and services that we see over the next several years won't support the size of the workforce that we had prior to the start of the pandemic. As previously announced, we've started implementing a reduction of our global staffing by approximately 10% by end of this year, from where we ended the year last year. Through the combination of voluntary layoffs, attrition, and where necessary, involuntary layoffs. These are difficult actions we're taking along with infrastructure and spending reductions to better position us for the future.
Calhoun said narrow-body planes will lead the recovery domestically, while slumped international demand is limiting wide-body fleets, including the 787. He said a layered approach to safety is critical to restoring safety in flight. It starts with preventing anyone with the virus from boarding the plane. Then airlines need to enhance their cleaning measures and improve airflow, including the use of HEPA filters. They also need to require passengers to wear face masks in flight. Now, despite the challenges, Calhoun said travel fundamentals remain intact, but air travel recovery is expected to take 3 years to get back to 2019 levels, and a few years beyond that to return to long-term growth trends.
Our industry and our company are weathering challenges like none we have ever experienced in our lifetimes. And many of those challenges are still unfolding. IATA projects passenger traffic will drop by more than half this year compared to 2019. As global economic activity slows down due to COVID, and governments severely restrict travel to contain the spread of the virus. After a sharp 94% drop in passenger traffic in April, we've seen tangible signs of recoveries in key markets, such as China and Europe, with operations increasing into July. The U.S. has also improved from the April lowest point. However, the recent uptick in COVID cases has slowed its recovery. So while we were encouraged by the early signs of recovery, the past few weeks demonstrate the trajectory may be uneven.
Just by way of information, the North Charleston campus fabricates, assembles, and installs systems for the rear fuselage sections of the Boeing 787 and joins and integrates the mid-body fuselage sections, which are then delivered to final assembly in Everett. Or some of them are moved across the campus to final assembly in North Charleston. So again, some more troubling news from Boeing and the North Charleston plant, which drives the state's top export of aircraft, totaling some $12 billion in export sales. The South Carolina Senate Testing and Tracing Subcommittee met Wednesday to look at the current status of the state's response to the pandemic. Testing was a main focus of the hearing, but speakers also discussed a variety of challenges facing response. State Director of Public Health, Dr. Joan Duvey, agreed with senators that testing needs to be increased, but staffing and supplies continue to be issues.
We need to be moving testing goals. We need to increase them. I will say that the month of July, we are on target to test over 5% of the population. So we greatly exceeded the testing goal, which was about 2.5% of the population. So we doubled that. And in fact, when we first started talking about increasing these testing goals, I think there was just a little bit of concern about, do we overpromise and underdeliver? Do we underpromise and overdeliver? What are we capable of doing? We didn't know at that point. And I think it's clear now that we have shown ourselves and shown the state that we are capable of doing much more than we said we were going to do. And we will continue to exceed our goals and we will increase our goals. I think, Senator Davis, you have mentioned that we need to be doing a lot more testing. Many states are doing 10% of their population on a monthly basis. And I think in my mind, that is, for me, a goal that I would like to set for the end of the year. Of course, this is Joan's goal. This isn't the goal in collaboration with our partners. And as you're aware, you're probably all aware, now with our hospitals really at capacity because of the number of people who are being treated for COVID-19 in those facilities, it is going to be difficult for us to rely on hospital staff to staff these testing events. We are working on developing a contract with folks who can come and do the sampling for us at these events. That's really the rate limiting step for DHEC.
You just heard Dr. Duvey say that we're at critical levels in our hospitals where staff is being stretched thin. And Dr. Patrick Cawley, the CEO of MUSC Health and Vice President for Health Affairs at the MUSC, said they are seeing a plateauing of patients on the coast coming to testing sites with symptoms, which he said could alleviate pressure and allow for some catch-up in August. But challenges remain.
So our issue is going to be test capacity that we have to work on. I think the ugly at the moment is most hospitals, their turnaround time for their hospitalized patients or patients that show up in the emergency room is actually pretty good. So most hospitals have learned to triage testing and have dealt with that. But the turnaround time outside the hospital, particularly for some of these community tent sites, has extended, particularly in the last week, 2 weeks. It's a combination of test problems, the sheer number of tests coming in, and in many circumstances, you're hearing it's taken 7 to 10 days to get a result back. So, you know, we got to work on that, right? But I think the only way to work on that is at the moment, I think what would help would be more testing capacity. So we'll get over probably this in the next week or two, right, as the number of needed tests actually goes down. But this issue is going to come back at us probably in the fall, when the need to do more tests may not be because people are infected, but we're trying to get out in front in order to get kids back in schools, in order to have universities running. We're going to have to solve this issue once again to make sure that the testing capacity is as robust as we can.
Testing in August is expected to become more stable and consistent, according to officials, with better structure of events that are no longer overlapping or having multiple events happen in one location at once and then being absent for extended periods. Officials plan to map out the entire month of testing. But again, hospital staffing and capacity remain the biggest challenges for hospitals in the state, according to Melanie Matney, who's the chief operating officer of the South Carolina Hospital Association, and they're struggling.
So in the first surge planning work, we decided that it would be best to keep those very ill patients in the hospitals at all costs, and then move patients who were less ill to alternate care locations. So right now there are, you've seen probably the news around the tents that are up in front of the Regional Medical Center. I know we have requests from the Prisma facilities to open up additional alternate care locations. And those are specifically to help create additional space within the hospital for very sick patients. I was pleased back in the spring that all hospitals had made additional adjustments. They had created new wings. Over the weekend, it was a very rough weekend for our hospitals on the seacoast. Had to create a whole new ICU wing. And hospitals are taking down wings, changing them, moving them around. They're making daily adjustments to create additional capacity. But I would be remiss if I didn't say that they're struggling. They're trying to keep up, and they are hoping that if they could probably open up additional ICU beds if they had additional staff, but I've mentioned the staffing challenges that they are having. So they're balancing what they're doing on an everyday basis, trying to make sure that they can keep up.
So that's some tough testimony to hear right there, folks. Medical professionals are struggling, and attempts to secure more staff has been extremely difficult, as these challenges are not unique to South Carolina. So do your part to help them. Now, this is our wind down section where we want to hear from you. Tell us what's going on in your world. Are you going to work? Are you unemployed? What's it been like now that these federal unemployment benefits have expired, if you're receiving them? Are you a medical professional on the front lines, like we were just talking about, the challenges facing hospitals? Tell us. We want to know. We're very interested, and so are our listeners. And you can do so by calling 803-563-7169. Leave us your name, where you're calling from, and a 1 to 3 minute long message. Again, that gets cut off at 3 minutes, folks. We know you love to talk, but just so you know, that's what happens. So 803-563-7169. And that being said, AT, do we have any voicemails?
Hold on, let me check.
Oh.
Nope. Let me check. Nope.
Huh.
Nothing.
That's weird. We've been saying that often. Okay, well, maybe people need to just give us a call, you know, let us know what's going on. With that being said, AT, then give us a little attic update. Tell us what's going on in your attic.
So what? It's been how many days now? 3 days since I've put a trap in my attic.
Incredible.
To trap a varmint. As of right now, there's nothing up there.
Oh,
empty
God,
trap.
Suspense.
Empty trap only. I put a piece of bread with creamy peanut butter on it.
Yeah.
And it is unperturbed.
Huh.
it has not been messed with.
Are the noises still happening? Are they there? Have you heard?
I mean, Caitlin thinks there's still noises.
Hmm.
But I don't. I'm unconvinced that there's a varmint or a little hairy creature living up there.
So
you have your own.
Yeah.
Theories.
So it's a poltergeist then, right?
I lean towards Spectre.
Okay.
But
well, if anyone has a priest that they could recommend, we'd appreciate it for AT's house.
803-563-7169.
Maybe go get some sage. Hotline. Burn the sage first.
Oh yeah, let's do a cleansing up there, and that'll be good. So, Gavin, I heard that you have a new obsession.
Yes. Like
Explain.
So many, they're unhealthy. But like I said, I was down hanging out with my parents over the weekend, and they love watching TV. I don't have cable TV. You know, I've been reading. I'm
brag,
cool like
brag,
that.
Brag.
But we were on the Bravo TV station, and below deck.
You sound like an old person.
Below deck, Mediterranean. Yeah. I mean, at first I was just like, oh God, it's just like, I don't watch reality TV. I hate reality TV. It is so pointless in my opinion.
But.
Big you buts. Mix in the Mediterranean, you mix in luxury yachting, which you know is one of my hobbies.
Yes.
You've been on my yacht.
This is a siren song for you. You just love Mallorca and Ibiza.
Yeah, tell us what your yacht names would be, folks. Yeah, Mykonos. I mean, I've been to Santorini. I've been to those places, some of those places, not brag, on a yacht, brag, but I've been.
Brag, brag.
But it's exciting to see it and just... But the personalities.
What do you
I mean,
about it?
I don't know. Think it's garbage. I don't know what I like about it. I don't know why I get addicted to it. I think it's because it's so unique and it's just so different. But I think they do a good job, because they have to make it look suspenseful with all the super cuts. So you think more action is really happening than what is, and it's not. And I think that's what helps get you keyed in there too. But it's.
I want to clarify here that I do know all about this show,
yes.
Not because I like it. I do think it's absolutely vapid, but. Caitlin loves this show.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I say love, I mean, she watches it every single week, exactly when it comes out, sits down, and she just smiles the whole time.
I think I enjoy the crew aspect. They seem like interesting characters.
They all hate each other.
I know. It's interesting.
They love
like
each
that.
Other
like
for
Hannah,
a second,
though.
Then they hate each other.
And then I'm also interested in observing the Nouveau Riche yachters. Because they're just so tacky sometimes, you know. And I get you're paying $200,000 for 2 days, but you know, I could, you know, you could do what kind of vacation you could have for $200,000? Like, give me a break. So, but
I don't get it. I don't get it. I wouldn't like it.
I wish
I was rich enough to go on the show and be the most boring guest. Of all time.
Oh, they just cut that out then. They make it look small. They won't sex it up like they do when, oh my God, someone fell off a jet ski and she dove in and like blah. Like
they
knew it was gonna be nothing.
They teased that part for literally 3 weeks.
Yes.
Mic off.
But like, yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
It was literally nothing. The lady fell off the side of a jet ski with a floating vest on.
But she, I mean, again, she said she was not a strong swimmer, which if you're not a strong swimmer, I don't know if you'd want to be on a boat. I mean, granted, you know, you can stay on the boat the whole day and not even touch the water. Gotcha. But those seas were choppy too. So there was some moving parts there. But
I mean, Kiko's struggling. The chef, he's in trouble.
The Vegas night, if you guys have seen this, I mean, the nachos, you're paying. I'm like, come on. You're putting out fried chicken.
And,
yeah. Well, that was Hannah messing him up too. We gotta stop listening to Hannah.
Hannah is devious.
I dig her. She does a good job. But I think I saw a prior season with Captain Mark. I think was the other captain besides Sandy. And I apologize to everyone that we're just getting into the weeds on this one. But I heard, based on the feedback on my Facebook that I put up, a lot of people are watching this show. So you are probably too.
It's awful.
You can only watch it on Peacock or on Bravo, apparently. If you want to watch
Peacock,
it's NBC streaming, but if you want to watch it, that's where it is.
Ugh.
But it was just like, you see like these toxic personalities in the wild and you're just like, oh my God, these people are real and that's how they really think. And that's just, it's a more of like an interesting study of the human condition in some respects that I find interesting. So
this is Gavin trying to gussy up his saccharine addiction.
You can easily distill it to be like trash drama, weird personalities, and rich people that don't know how to spend their money. That's the distillation
exactly
of it all.
Right.
And travel.
I can't stand it. But I will say it is 1,000 times better than The Bachelor. The Bachelor is the worst show on television.
Don't even talk to me about it. My family watches that. I can't even watch it. And then there's another one.
Caitlin watches it, and it just gives me a headache when the sound of The Bachelor is on.
And I will admit that there was another show that I jumped into really quick, Renovation Island on HGTV. So that's,
what is that?
This family from Canada like bought a resort and it's like going through them renovating the whole resort and getting it up. And basically we looked into it and
this sounds like a cult.
They're just rich Canadians and they opened it. And then of course COVID-19 happened. So it's like another setback. I can only imagine how they're feeling now, but now I'm finishing up Dr. Sleep because I'm like into it. I'm like 60% of the way through the book. Could barely go to sleep last night because I wanted to keep reading. So I'm all in the read life. Yeah, books, that's where I'm at right now. Turn the TV off, folks. There are plenty of books out there. Plenty of books.
Gotta read Dune next.
You know, my brother said, did he say this on the pod last week, that Dune was his favorite David Lynch movie? That,
which is garbage. We laugh in his face.
Oh my God, Colin.
That's so wrong.
Like Blue Velvet, man. Anyway, let us know what you're reading, what you're watching, your thoughts on this junk conversation we just had about reality TV. The whole point of this section is just to distract you from everything that's going on right now.
If you think Kiko is ever going to get out of the weeds.
I think he's going to get fired.
I think Kiko's
nachos.
Done for.
Yeah. yeah, just what you think about Below Deck. If you haven't watched it, that's cool. Don't start. Be cool. Be cool. Don't do drugs, kids. Reality TV. Let us know, 803-563-7169. Leave us a message. Also, leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And stay up to date with the latest on scetv.org and southcarolinapublicradio.org. And don't forget to support your local newspapers. Also, consider becoming an ETV member. Membership starts at just $40, and if you pledge at the $75 level, you get access to PBS Passport, where there is no reality TV. That's a good thing. I don't think there are. No, there are not. And all that great programming, your donation helps support. So again, if you've tapped out on reality TV, if you were done with cable, if you're done with Netflix, check out PBS Passport. You get access to that if you become a member at the $75 level. For the South Carolina Lead, I'm Gavin Jackson. Be well, South Carolina. Should I be wearing a mask while we do this? I haven't been doing that at all. Should I be doing
Actually, you can get it over FaceTime.
Just FaceTime my brother yesterday. Oh, my God.
Oh, no. Now I got to call him. Tell him to get tested.